Hello!
Welcome back
to episode 2.
We've made it there.
The Creative Types is the name of the show, officially, now.
Yeah. After a long process of eliminating all the kind of names we could come up with.
Yeah, that was a bit of a long slog, to say the least.
Slog.
I don't know, is slog a word?
I don't think I've ever used the word slog in my life.
Is it slog or slog? It might be slog.
Because I've... Schlog sounds like something I do in the toilet after eating a vindaloo.
That was a good vindaloo, though, to be fair.
It was a good vindaloo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Jason thought about it, but... He's not been the same.
Neither's our bathroom, either, to be honest.
True. I think we run out of very cheap toilet roll pretty damn fast. Don't buy a cheap toilet roll. Bloody goes fast. Especially in our house.
So welcome back, I guess. It's been, well, a week and a half since we've uploaded. About 2 weeks. Nearly 2 weeks since we recorded our last episode. So yes, this is episode 2 today.
Thank you for joining us if you're now a follower.
Yes.
Or a common listener.
Or a downloader.
Yeah, those downloaders.
We've been keeping track. We have 34 downloads.
Oh, I'm not bothered by that sort of statistics, Wayne.
Well, no, neither am I.
We just came across those,
yes,
didn't we?
We just stumbled across them, and, you know, as luck would have it, we saw that we had, you know, a considerable amount. We were quite chuffed. So, continue with the downloads, continue with the subscribing.
And stop talking like that, please.
Sorry.
Okay. Do you want to sort of get the show rolling?
Yeah, okay.
Show.
So, today we're going to talk to you about The Black Swan, which we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday being...
Wednesday.
The 26th. Wednesday the 26th. For your future listeners, today being the 27th.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to talk to you about preparing yourself for breaking into the industry, the creative industry.
Because we're both sort of coming to the end of our university careers.
Yeah.
So it's time to be writing those CVs, dust off those old... CVs.
Those old CVs.
Yeah, like ones before you went to university. Didn't you have like ones that are like, I'm really energetic and I'm motivated and I work good at a team. Put me in a team, I make a bloody good cup of tea. That kind of stuff. You know what I mean.
I didn't have a CV like that.
You didn't have a CV?
No, I had a CV, but I didn't have a CV like that.
What do you mean? The ones that you can't really say anything.
Energetic.
I'm energetic, I'm enthusiastic.
No workplace wants you to be energetic,
well, actually,
unless you're an actor.
Well, exactly. Stick that on your CV.
I'm energetic. I work well in a team.
No, but that's the sort of common stuff that people put onto CVs, isn't it?
Yeah. But anyway, we'll talk about that stuff later. We're getting sidetracked.
Oh, yeah.
We're also going to talk a little bit more about some big industry news.
Yeah, hopefully.
Later.
Did you all like our jingle? I wonder if they did.
Yes, we haven't had any emails for feedback from the last podcast. So please do send us your feedback. We do love to hear from people. Good or bad.
Just to know that we're actually getting real people listening would be nice as well. Because this would be...
So far, I've had feedback from one person.
Well, we've got one who's a friend definite from home. Human listener.
Well, yes, that's true. Okay, and then after the big industry news, we're going to talk about a particular competition that's called Our Eye.
Yeah.
Or particularly Gem's Eye.
My Eye.
This week. Gem's always on the lookout for good, good competitions. So,
I'm a competition whore.
Yes, indeed.
So, on with the show.
On with the show! Black Swan.
Black Swan. That feathery film.
Feathery film. Fantastic.
That's it. That's very professional of you, Wayne. You just quickly type in Wikipedia to
out. I'm not typing in Wikipedia at all.
We did actually watch Black Swan.
We did watch Black Swan. I'm just making sure I get all my names right.
See, that's what happens when you don't do... That's what happens when you don't do your research. You get to find out that an actual black swan's real name is called a Cygnus astratus. We've actually found a black swan. Yeah, I don't think that's the black swan we're looking for.
The black swan is a large water bird which breeds mainly in the southeast and southwest regions of Australia.
No, we want the Natalie Portman nipple one, please.
Yes, disambiguation, please. Black swan.
There we go.
I was meant, for the record, I was meant... No, we want the 2010 film.
Anyway.
For the record, I was meant to bring this article up before we started recording, but I forgot. Okay, so...
I hope you like the little trivia on black swans, so...
Yeah, fun facts for you.
Yes.
Where to begin, really? Black Swan.
Well, what did you think of it?
Bloody fantastic.
Well, how did you actually... Did you enjoy the sitting? I know your view was a little...
Well, sitting second row back did give me a new perspective on people's physiques. People who I used to think were quite skinny had rather podgy bottoms.
Does that mean you got to see...
tiny pinheads.
Does that mean you got to see Natalie Portman's breasts at quite a... deformed angle.
Deformed angle?
Well, I was sitting at the front for a little while before I quickly ran to those seats.
Her breasts were exquisite.
From that close up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But her head was probably tiny.
Anyway.
Yes.
Black Swan, starring Natalie Portman. Mm-hmm. And also Vincent Cassell, who was playing her teacher.
Yeah, he was pretty damn good.
Yes, very good. Liked him. And Myla... Is it Myla?
Myla Kunis.
Kunis. Yeah.
That's the other hot one.
Yes. Her doppelganger?
Yeah, sort of.
Ish.
So, what do you like about the film?
Well, where to begin, really?
I know where to begin, but I'm not going to go there just yet.
I think I know where you're thinking of beginning, but we're not going to go there, not just yet.
No, we'll think of, we'll talk about the actual...
artistic stuff
yes,
first.
Yes, we'll sound creative first.
Yeah. Okay, so basically, general synopsis of the film, I guess, would be a good start, for those who don't know. It's about a young ballet trainee person, girl, played by Natalie Portman, called Nina. And basically, she's training. I don't know if she's training or whether she's part of.
Well, she's already a ballerina, but she just wants to. She's actually auditioning for that part, isn't she?
Oh, of course, yeah. So she's a member of a ballet company, which is led by
Vincent Cassell.
Vincent Cassell's character, who I fail to remember his character's name. And they are producing a new version of Swan Lake. The company are after one performer to play both the White Swan and the Black Swan, or the Swan Queen, which Natalie Portman's character, Nina, is desperate to get the part for. It's the part she's worked her entire career for. And loads of stuff really just unfolds.
Well, at the beginning, sort of, she's already... The guy says, as Thomas says to her, like, you've got the characteristics of the White Swan already. I just need to see your Black Swan.
Black Swan.
So, sort of, the film is her development in sort of becoming this Black Swan, but it also gets mixed in with a bit of thriller and a bit of psychological... No, Wayne, we're not... I was in a flow then.
Well, it's revenge.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry? Well, you should be sorry.
I'm sorry, Jim.
Yes, so she gets sort of caught up in these emotions, trying to find... finding sort of the inspiration to become that Black Swan.
Yeah, and it's really interesting as well. What I quite liked about the film is that you kind of... You get in there, you kind of think you see where it's going, and then it takes a completely different turn. Like, I thought it was going to be... she gets the part... He wants to see her Black Swan. They get it on. She finds her sexual drive through it, and that is how she produces a Black Swan. That's how I thought it was going to go initially.
The writer, because I listened to that writer's thing I said to you, I listened already to an interview, and they purposely said exactly what you just said there, is they made sure they totally avoided that.
Yeah.
Like, they said they wanted to make it clear that he was only, like, Thomas was only training her to become the Black Swan, and that he actually never, ever had any sort of sexual lust for her. Mm-hmm. It was all just to bring out her. It was all just for the art.
Yeah. One thing that I said to you when we left the cinema yesterday is what I loved about that film is as an artist, as a performing artist, I could very much relate to so much of that film. Like when he was doing all that stuff that made the audience think, ooh, he's a creep. You know?
Yeah.
I could understand where he was coming from. His methods were a bit risque, but I could understand exactly where he was coming from. And that's what kind of kept me on edge with all of that, because there were points where I was thinking, is he doing it for the art? Is he not doing it for the art? Is he doing it for the lust? Is he not? Like, the initial kiss in the office...
Yeah.
I understood what he was trying to do with that. And then when he started... When they were in the dance studio and he really started going for it...
Yeah.
I thought, okay, maybe not so much. And then he backed off again. But that was really interesting.
What I really, really enjoyed about the film is how... I know I suppose we spoke about it as well. But you know the way it sort of mixed reality with this fantasy, whereas... Sometimes you never actually knew whether what you was watching actually happened, mm-hmm. or whether that was actually like a bit of her fantasy playing out. Or
yeah. I did like that, because usually with films like that you can usually tell what's what.
Yeah. But the audience actually got a bit sort of lost in the whole. Is this real? Is that wrong? Yeah. Am I thinking this? And even like Lisa I went with, she was saying how she like, it was actually, like, more scary than watching a horror, because it was so psychological that the fear was actually this psychological fear that you were feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you felt you were going a bit mad, not understanding what was going on.
Mm, I have to say, the thing I was most scared of was her mum.
Yeah, her mum was petrifying. Great character, to say she didn't have much of a... Well, she had a bit of, like, a role, but she was only one of the...
She was a background
character,
role. Yeah, but she was... The way she portrayed herself, because at the beginning you were like, "Oh, she's a nice woman."
Yeah, like a caring mum.
And then as soon as she's cutting that cake, and she goes, "No, my stomach's still."
And she just flips out.
And she goes, "Well, fine then. Well, it's garbage."
Yeah.
Which is kind of something my mum would do, but it was the way she did it.
No, I found it really creepy after that when she sort of got the cream on her finger and like forced it into her mouth to lick it off.
That was what was made it creep. That was what made it creepy.
And then again, when she was sort of... When she'd come home and her mum would sort of, like, undress her, like... And the way she just did it was just, ugh.
Yeah, it was that sort of... She was a gentle character, but too gentle.
Yeah, that's it.
Far too gentle. But, I mean, I don't like dance films.
No.
I really don't like them. Because I can't... I struggle to relate to dance and whatnot. But this was not a dance film.
As you say, it was just a backdrop. That dance was a backdrop to a more sort of deeper sort of emotion to it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, seriously think that Natalie Portman deserves an award for this film. I really, really do. It was, once she got into the role of the Black Swan and really went for it, I just thought, yes. This is a performer worth her weight in gold. When she was playing the Black Swan, she was badass. Absolutely badass. And I didn't think I'd ever be able to say that about Natalie Portman. But she just owned the screen completely. Like, you weren't even looking at anybody else. And there were shots where there were other people in them, in focus. And you weren't watching them, you were watching her. I mean, there were times in the film you were watching her, but for completely other different reasons. But just, she owned that part, and I was saying yesterday, I think that part, she was made for that part. I don't think I could have cast anybody else in that part. Because she's got such this innocent... And I think she... Oh, fantastic job, is all I can say.
So basically,
really.
She deserves the award.
Definitely. She needs to get an award for that. I would be very upset if she doesn't get one.
But what did you think about the film, sort of technically, with the... sort of cinematography. Remember we were saying about the use of mirrors? There was a lot of mirrors used within
that. Oh, yeah.
There's a terrible amount of mirrors used in that.
I have a bit of a phobia of mirrors. All started because when I was younger, I saw an episode of a supernatural program type thing, and there was this thing about mirrors, and it's just stuck in my head, and I've never liked mirrors since, particularly in a dark room. and the use of mirrors in this film. It kind of gone back to my to the back of my head, completely forgotten about it. And then when she was looking in the mirror, and then her reflection started scratching her back.
Oh yeah, that was freaky, wasn't it?
I kind of thought, okay, I can deal with that. I can deal with that. And then her reflection turned around and looked at her. That. Oh. No, the thought of that just makes me cringe. And I don't know why. Because, really, if it's just your reflection, it's just you. But then, this film suggests
about a sort of alter ego, so therefore it's all this fractured sort of personality. Yeah. And
but then, there's just so much to talk about with this film.
To be honest, we could never talk about it. We can't describe it to you enough. No. Like, you're going to have to just go watch it. Just for yourself. I want to watch it again. Yeah.
I've been rating it all day. To anybody that will listen to me, I've been telling them to go and see this film, particularly as performers. Because one thing I have to say for any performers, or performing artists or whatever, is, as I was saying earlier, I can relate so much to this film just because it deals with pressure from external forces, pressure from yourself that you put on yourself, the amount that you throw yourself into a part sometimes, and also how dangerous it can be to throw yourself in too far, which is what happened to the lead, Natalie Portman, and her character Nina. Is she got so into this, I have to be perfect, that I think most performers suffer from. I suffer from it. I'm a huge perfectionist, and I will never, ever be happy with my work, because I'll always think I can be better. So I can relate to it so much on that respect, just because I'm always striving for that. But there was just so much. It's just, as we said, we would be sitting here all night trying to...
But when I was listening to the interview with the writers, they originally wrote that script just to be like a ballet performance, and then the writer actually has a friend who was in ballet, and he showed her the first draft, and she was like, it's just missing something. And then she actually did say to him that he ended up asking, so why do you do ballet? And she was like, just because you want to be perfect. So that actually was the underlying theme, was this perfection, was the fact that... Sorry. In anything we do, we always strive for perfection. And that's what that film was basically trying to say there.
Well, that was the message I mainly got from the film.
But then it's also saying sort of like, although we strive for perfection, then you had Thomas who was saying that sometimes not perfection isn't not art, because you can be perfect at something to technically, but artistically, you're not actually achieving your full potential.
Yeah.
So it was very bloody good film.
Definitely.
So we should probably end it on that. There's so much more we could talk about, but we don't want to go on forever.
Just go and see the film, because we will be here all night otherwise talking to you about it.
So we've got to give it the rating.
Oh yes, the rating.
What would you give it?
Well,
I'm pushing a 9, to be honest.
I was going to say the same.
I'm thinking 8.5, 9.
I gave King's Speech an 8.
Yeah, and we ended on an 8, didn't we?
We ended on an 8.
It was,
and I am actually thinking Black Swan might have been a better film.
I'm actually agreeing with you on that.
And I thought King's Speech was incredible.
I'm just happy we've gone and watched two bloody good films in the last couple of weeks.
Two good films.
Let's just hope they keep rolling out decent films.
Yeah, well, from the looks of things this year, there's going to be some good ones. But yeah, I am going to go with a 9, I think.
Yeah, we're giving it a 9.
Because I would go and see this one again. I wouldn't have gone and seen King's Speech again, but I would go and see this film a second time.
So it's a 9. It's getting a 9.
It's a 9.
So that's a definite go see. So, yeah. Go see it.
Go see it. Right. Up next, then.
What have we got next?
A serious, serious conversation.
Serious topic.
Serious topic of the week. Fortnite.
Of the fortnight.
We're looking to get Fortnites.
Well, hopefully.
At the moment. So, serious topic of the Fortnite.
Is about CVs, isn't it?
Well, not specifically CVs. Mainly CVs, but not just specifically.
Well, yeah, we came to it because we've both been writing our CVs.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe it'd be worth talking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, the paperwork that comes with trying to sell yourself, essentially.
Becoming a bags the brand, basically.
Becoming a bags... where has Bags the Brand gone? I want Bags the Brand back on my TV screen.
He'll be back. He'll be back.
Preparing yourself for breaking into an industry.
A creative industry.
Creative industry.
And how do you prepare yourself, Mr. Wayne Ingram?
Well, it all depends what you're doing, really. For us,
actors.
We both...
Oh,
well,
us too.
Oh, us, oh, the okay. creative type.
Oh, you're seeing us on the level now. We're
we're on the same level for a change. I'm usually better than you. We both require a showreel.
Yeah.
And a CV.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're headed for sort of...
More production-based, really.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'd love to write, but...
Production and pre-production more than anything else.
Yeah.
So your filmmaking and your script writing.
Yeah.
Are your main two.
Yeah.
You don't want camera work, do you?
No.
No. Okay. So, I'd assume you'd need some form of portfolio, wouldn't you?
Well...
Surely it's better for you to have one than not.
But what do you mean by portfolio? Like, because as you say, the showreel shows you what sort of stuff you've done.
Yeah, true.
Then it's just sort of talking about what you've actually...
Well, I mean, to be fair, my portfolio consists of a headshot.
Yeah.
CV. Plus pictures of me in shows.
Well, to be honest, I don't think
programs.
I really need pictures of myself because that would be...
I'm just thinking of you with a criminal mugshot, that's all.
I thought you were thinking of me in some other kind of picture for a moment there.
Steady on. This is getting rather sexual.
Get off me.
So...
It's all that feathery fun.
You're not Natalie Portman. Stop it.
I wish I was.
Oh, I wish you was. Anyway, this is getting weird. Let's stop that.
What do you put on your CV?
On my CV,
yeah.
I have a little mini headshot in the corner, which is my second headshot with me with a beard, because my main headshot is me without a beard.
Is that like a beard as in a Photoshop beard, or is that actually like...
That is actually my genuine beard.
Okay. You didn't go for some big handlebars.
CG beard.
just go for it, I would just... This is me with a beard. A bloody big beard. Maybe. No?
Well, with your headshots, though, it's very important for it to look like you. So,
see if you can actually pull off that imprint.
If I was to put a CG beard on my headshot, I'd have to somehow get a CG beard on my actual face when I go to auditions.
Fair enough.
So that's tip number one if you're getting headshots as a... performer, make sure they look like you. That's the most important thing. Not whether it looks nice or whether you
don't,
look.
Don't borrow someone else's.
Don't borrow somebody else's. It's not like fake ID. Yes.
It doesn't work.
You know, it doesn't work. In fact, you just end up pissing agents or directors off, and then you probably will never ever work again.
Lucky for me, we don't actually need to put CVs on our CVs, pictures on our CVs, because that's called discrimination.
Well, that's the thing. The acting industry, well, the performance industry, is really the only industry that can openly discriminate.
Yeah, true. Back to the CV. What are you putting on your CV? Are you putting in any experiences? Are you doing what shows you've done? Or
I've put a selection of the shows I've done.
Mm.
I've not put all the shows that I've done because, quite frankly, it's quite a big list. Because if I was to include my amateur stuff as well.
Yeah.
Which I've only included one of my amateur shows, and that's Popcorn by Ben Elton. I was the lead in that, and it was probably still one of the best performances I've ever done.
But do you actually think your CV is really, like, when someone's looking to get somebody in for the part,
yeah,
do they actually look at a CV?
Apart
from wanting to think, oh, right, you're a trained actor, maybe you've trained here or that. But
that's a good question. I think, first and foremost, your CV is more for your agent than it is your casting director.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
However, one thing that I always think is, you're only as good as your last show.
Mm.
But they might not have seen your shows. So then, they have to think, well, what are they capable of?
Yeah.
Because don't forget, your CV includes what the show was, where it was, who you played, who it was directed by, and that's... That's more the big sell. where it was and who it was directed by.
Yeah.
If you've got a big name on your CV that you were directed by, that means you're damn good.
Do you have any big names?
I was directed by Gemma McDonnell, who is the artistic director of the Paperbirds Theatre Company, which is not a huge company, but it's got a good reputation.
Okay.
And that contact could serve me very well. So when you send your CV to a casting director or a casting agent or whatever, they're going to look at that and they're going to go, okay, so what is he capable of? Which is why you've kind of got to be selective of what you put on there as well. Any actor's going to want to lean themselves in a certain direction at different times. They might want to go straight for their obvious casting, or they might want to go, actually, no, I want to try something different. I want to show people that I can play against type. Because the worst thing for an actor is to play the same role for the rest of your life, because that's not what it's about. So if I was... Because I think I play dark characters pretty well, and I've been told as such. But if you were to look at me, initially, that's not the first thing you think. I don't think. So I am leaning my CV a little more to the darker characters, like the serial killer I played in Popcorn, like Richard III. So your CV is a bit of a... It's being economical with the truth, I think, is the trick. You're not lying. Never, ever lie on your CV, ever, because if you get caught out, you're screwed. But you don't tell them the stuff that's going to make you not look as good.
Because I've found with my CV as well, like, because I've been applying for apprenticeships, and some of those are in TV, which means I've got to sort of change a bit around to aim it at the TV. Then some say, well, why do you want to... Then I've been looking for film apprentices, and then you've got to change it again for why you want to... So it's all about, I guess, adapting. I guess you don't really need to adapt so much to each role, do you, for yours?
Not so much, because, I mean, a good CV shows variety in what you can do.
Yeah.
So what I would hopefully want my CV to look like eventually is I can play dark roles, I can play comedy roles, I can play romantic leads, you know, all of them. But at such an early stage, which we assume most of our listeners are at, you're not going to have that variety. So you'll probably find that you'll be adapting your CV quite regularly to go to get those roles to stick on your CV.
So you're saying as well, maybe, that you should probably go look for a variety of roles so that you can... So have in mind, maybe before you go for a role, the CV, like thinking, well, if I go for that role, or...
Yeah. I would think... I mean, this is not something we've been advised on our course at all. This is something that I've kind of cooked up in my own head.
Yeah.
But I'm planning to have 2 or 3 CVs. Pretty much the same. The only difference is the roles that are on there that I've played, the credits. Just because... Because your CV shouldn't be any more than 2 pages. It needs to be condensed. So you're scrapping a lot of the roles on there. So you're focusing on certain ones. So I've got 2 or 3 CVs, if I'm going for a comedy role, that's the CV I'll send. If I'm going for a darker role, that's the CV I'll send.
Do you sort of have to, sort of like you say, right, I've been in, say, Popcorn, do you then bullet point, like, the sort of your role, or do you sort of just say, I was this guy, and they assume what you are, or do you have to say, I had to play this type of character? What is it? How do you do that? Because what if someone's never seen the show? Or is it always popular shows you're playing? I don't know.
That is a good point.
Because, like, with me, with my CV, I know that if I've done some work experience, I've listed the kind of things I've done for that work experience. Therefore, they know, okay, he's done that before. Whereas with your character, do you actually...
No, that is a good point. I haven't on my CV.
But,
but I could understand the need to.
Yeah, just so that... What if they didn't understand what that character does? And so maybe you give a list of those sort of... characteristics are like, I don't know. I don't know how it works, to be honest. But I know in my CV, I have to...
The difficulty with CVs is you've got to keep them short, but you've got to sell so much. The best things to put on your CV, particularly when it comes to agents anyway, are the things that are going to make them ask you questions, make them go, oh, what's that about? Because then they give you something to play off. And that's the trick to selling yourself. Give them questions. good questions, obviously not. Not why haven't you been working for the last 4 years?
Never. You never won that question.
But give them a hook, really, is the trick. You need to give them something quirky about yourself that's the truth, that's going to make them ask questions. I mean, there's so much advice you can give. But I don't know. I really don't know. Ask me another question.
Well, I'll talk a bit about, for my, if anyone's doing sort of a media production, because I know that I've been, luckily, which I've found, which if you're doing any sort of creative course, I think it's key that you do work experience, because it's all well and good saying, all right, I'm trained, I've got this degree, but at the end of the day, when you go into the actual industry,
nobody cares.
All right, you've got, to be honest, it's become a bit more, it's standard that you have a degree. Degree's the start, that's like the step. And then I think after that, it's like, now, but what have you actually done? What can you do?
Yeah.
That's what people are more interested in.
The degree just says you're competent.
Yeah, you can do it.
Yeah.
But I want to know how well you can actually do it, or what you can actually do. So that's why I think that mainly I would just say the best advice I could give is get as much sort of work experience in as possible. Do as much. Like I've done a bit at magazines. I've done a bit, like I've done filming, like a bit of helping out on production sets. So I just think you just got to really, because even now I'm looking back at my, while I'm writing my CV, I'm thinking, oh, I wish I'd done a bit more so I could sort of have another thing to say. I've done a bit of this and I've done a bit of that. And you've just got to cover all the, at nowadays especially, you can't just say, I've just do one thing. I just do one, especially in media, you've got to be a bit of a jack of all trades. You really need to know inside out, like writing for magazines, you've got to know how to do websites. You've got to know how to film, light, and this, that, that. The more you can say you do, the more likely you're going to get employed.
Yeah.
And that's all I could say, just really work experience, just go for it, take it up. And you're only going to learn by going on a work experience anyway.
And if you're on a course, like early on, definitely just get any unpaid experience you can get.
Yeah.
Because once you're out there, you don't want to be going for unpaid stuff, really. You want to be going for paid stuff. Obviously, if there's an opportunity there that you can afford to do, go for it by all means. But obviously the preference is, I'm working now as a professional, I want to get paid for this. So get that experience whilst you're training.
Well, you've got to give, at the end of the day, you've got to give that person the reason for why they think, well, you're not, you all right, you've got a degree, but still, I don't know you can do the job, why should I pay you? Until you can actually say, I can do this job to this standard, then you deserve to have money.
I mean, if all that's on your CV, let's say from my perspective, is, you know, I've done shows produced by the university, I've done a few, not student films, because student films are good, but I've just done shows by the university.
Yeah.
They're not going to really care, because everybody who was on that course has done them shows. But if you then say, okay, well, I've done the shows with the university, plus I've done this film, and this film, and this film, they didn't get very far, but I've done them. That's still better than.
Well, again, it's just again going back to the brand. At the end of the day, you have got to be that other person. That person is going against your job. You've just got to say, well, you've done this and this, I've done this and this, but I've done this more than you.
Yeah,
and that's it, really.
It's I see your short film.
Yeah,
and I raise you a feature length student film.
Yeah, exactly.
And things like that.
Yeah, that's basically. Yeah, but I found it really difficult writing a CV, especially now it's a media-based CV, but you just got to, the more you've done, the better, really.
Yeah, definitely. So, question.
Yes.
Other than a CV, what can you do to just show that little bit more something that's that's going to draw them in? What can you do other than a CV?
There's loads of things, really, because sometimes you don't know, like, as I say, you've got to have a website, I reckon, nowadays. You've got to be with all the latest sort of Twitter, Facebook. You've got to be out there. I think having websites, doing blogs is always a good start as well. Just showing that you're constantly proactive. But then again, I've got to say, I think a lot of it actually, CV is a good thing, but I think personality-wise, I think you have to have a massive personality. You might have the best CV on earth, but you turn up and you're like, you have no personality. You're just agreeing, or you're answering the questions just the way you've been told to answer those. It goes back to bloody Black Swan. If you'll just be perfect in what
you
do.
Yeah, definitely.
But you don't actually have anything more to your actual character, then why? No one's worried. They want to know that you're human too. They want to know you still have flaws. Just, I think, have a good personality. Be friendly with people. Always, never have, like, have time for everyone. Like, really just, I don't know, I think it's really bad when people sort of, I don't know, just go out there sort of, oh, I've got this and I've got that, but you've got no actual personality to get the job. And I just think, in that sense, you just...
And so many jobs are earned more from people who have got that personality than sometimes even talent.
It's not about, like, ass-kissing or anything. It's just simply just showing who you actually are. People want to know that you look like an honest person. Mm. You're a hard-working person. And I think people can tell more from you as a person than your CV probably
says. Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. Be yourself. That is possibly...
Because they can see through. These are professionals you're going, you're working with. They know, they've seen it 100 times before. Don't try to sort of...
Pull the wool over.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Just don't try it. Just be you and show them what you can do. And just
And at the end of the day, if you be you, you'll be so much more relaxed. If you're just yourself, you know, whatever quirks you've got, I mean, by all means, amplify them a little bit if you need to.
Mm.
Particularly for actors, maybe not so much for the media types. Mm. Although, I think that's it's still relevant, but maybe a little bit more for actors. Amplify them a little bit by all means. But the most important thing is that you are yourself. Because not only are they looking how much talent you've got, they're looking at how much drive you've got, how much passion you've got, and how you will work with them.
Mm.
And if they can't pick up your personality, or they think that you're a liar, or you think, or he's arrogant, or whatever, they're not going to employ you. They're just not.
But even sometimes, like, you might even, I say all the time, is a possibility for meeting people. Like, you might just bump into someone, but if you're friendly, you might not even need that CV before you've... Exactly. You might say, look, I like you, I've got this that needs doing, can you help me out?
Mm. Well, so, I mean, so many jobs are earned from rubbing shoulders with people. So many jobs. So many.
So, yeah, just take something from that, hopefully.
Mm. Just work your ass off at getting your name out there is the biggest thing I can say.
And just be proactive. Mm. Want it. If you want it, you'll get it.
Definitely. Right.
Right.
Shall we move on, then?
Let's move on.
To some big industry news!
Big industry news. So what's your news today? What have you got for us?
My news story today, which I stumbled upon...
Yeah.
Was in the stage... Well, it was yesterday, in the stage.
Yeah.
It has been revealed that director Mike Lee is returning to the National Theatre with a new play starring Leslie Manville and Ruby Bentall.
And what is this play about?
Well, this is the thing with Mike Lee. Mike Lee quite often doesn't know. Okay?
Mm.
It's going to be written and directed by him.
Yeah. Okay?
And basically, the way Mike Lee works is he gets his actors together, he finds the characters in the actors, and then he puts their characters in different situations and makes a play from that. Okay. So he doesn't actually know. Well, he probably knows now, but when he first pulled them together, doesn't know what the play's about. And that's how he sells it to the actors. He says, do you want to be in a play with me? Well, what's it about? I don't know. That's the genius of it.
What's your view on sort of that sort of style of making plays?
Well, we used a similar system on our course to create a show last year.
Mm.
I'm in the process of, well, just about to begin a process of creating a play with four actors using a very similar process that we've tweaked ourselves to make it more appropriate. I love the process. It's incredible. Essentially, you go into every rehearsal not having a clue what's going to happen. And to some people, that's really scary. But to others, it's just exciting every time. Because the way we did it was we went into rehearsal, we got a little slip of paper saying, we knew our character, a little bit of paper saying, this is where you are, this is what you're trying to achieve in the scene, go. That's all we had. And we just had to improvise.
So there is a very light level of sort of structure. There has, I guess, has to be that.
Yeah,
sort
but they it's impossible to know where it's going until that scene has been improvised.
Okay.
So you might know the next step, but that's all you know. You might have ideas, and you might try and lead it in that direction, but if the actors change their direction rapidly...
But then, as a writer, I would say, like, well, not as a writer, as an aspiring writer, like, don't you think... Does an actual structure come from that naturally? Does that happen organically?
Yeah, structure will happen organically, because what happens is you improvise a scene, and quite often these scenes, which you only intend to be 1 or 2 minutes long, will actually last about 10 minutes, because the actors are just going. And then you step back and you say, okay, that worked, that didn't work. Take out the stuff that didn't work,
so you...
condense it down, do it again.
I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a really interesting process. I mean, my character in the show we did before, it was leaning towards he was going to kill his wife, but then there was one improvisation where my character was going on about how much he cared about his wife, so the director said, oh, well, I don't think he'd kill her then. So then she had to go back to the drawing board and think where it's going to go next.
So it is sort of just, it's kind of like writing the first draft in a script
mm-hmm.
through acting and then yes. pulling out those bits of gold and then pushing them all together at the end.
It's kind of like we were saying last week when we were talking about how acting and writing can combine. That process is it. The actors are the characters. The characters are in the situations.
So instead of sitting there writing in your head, you're writing it visually with what you're actually seeing.
Exactly. It's such a good process. And Mike Lee is a genius for coming up with the process. It's opening September, or it's due to open in September, at the National Theatre in London. No doubt going to be very interesting to see. So get booking those tickets, is what I would say.
And on to the next bit of news, which is chosen by moi. Basically, in the news recently, I don't know if you've been listening to the news, Mr. Wayne, mm-hmm. is that a few people have been complaining about the amount of middle-class sitcoms on TV these days.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your... Like, do you think there's a lot of middle-class sitcoms these days?
Well, my question, first of all, is what is the problem with middle-class sitcoms?
I don't know. They're saying that basically that working-class people aren't being represented enough in TV.
But you see, well, my starting point would be the middle-class and the working-class is so blurred these days.
Do you honestly believe that?
I think... Well, I mean, I come from Sutton Coldfield in Birmingham.
What would you say you are, then?
I am working-class.
Yeah.
But I think people could mistake me for middle class.
Yeah.
Would you have thought I was middle class?
Yeah, probably.
Exactly. But I'm working class. My mum's a cleaner at a school, and a dinner lady, and my dad is a carpenter by trade.
Yeah, so you're from a working class background.
I'm from a working class background. I'm an actor.
Mm.
Well, student actor, which is working class. It's not middle class.
Mm.
Working class. So I am working class. But I can relate to people middle class.
So do you think is it?
I mean, I'd probably say I'm upper working class.
Because
my dad owns his own business, but it doesn't mean we're well off. But we're still working class.
But the question that they're sort of putting forward is, does it really matter? Like as you're saying yourself, right there, like
I don't think it does.
Because I know I've listened to a few sort of debates on this, and a lot of people are saying sort of, well, at the end of the day, if it makes me laugh, I don't really care what class it is.
Well, yeah, exactly. Surely the importance is whether or not it's funny or not. If it's funny, it means you can relate to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the comedy comes from, the fact that you're relating. So, but then whoever's been complaining about it, or whether it's working class people or people who's mm-hmm. watching it and not finding it funny, is it maybe that they're the working class and they're not actually finding it funny, or they can't relate to it, or... I don't know how the debate's come across up, to be honest.
No, I'm struggling to get my head around it as well, to be honest. I mean, let's think of working class sitcoms. Porridge.
Only Fools and Horses.
Only Fools and Horses. Fawlty Towers.
Working class. He's fighting to be a better class, he is working class, but he thinks he's better than he is.
Yeah.
But then, this is an interesting point, because I bought Mark Blake's book on sitcom writing, mm-hmm. and he talks so much about the fact that in sitcom it works with classes, and the fact that you have these clashes of classes is actually what makes it sort of comedy. The fact that Fawlty thinks he's better than he actually is is what makes it comedy.
Well, I mean, let's think of the opposite end of the spectrum. One of the best British sitcoms of the last 50 years, Blackadder.
Yeah. Exactly.
That is not... That is above middle class. That is... First... Like, what's it called?
Upper class.
Upper class.
you're so working class, you don't even
high
know.
High class, no. First class, no. Upper class.
Yes.
Yeah. That is upper class.
Yeah.
That's royalty you're dealing with there, on the most part.
And yet,
that's still hilarious.
I'm going to do something really clever now. I'm going to actually relate what you're just saying there, the upper class, back to when we watched King's Speech last week, is the fact that even, like, that's what breaks the levels, is that you might be working class, you might be middle class, you might be upper class, but we all suffer the same, like, downfalls. Mm-hmm. That's why we laugh here, because we all still have those same sort of issues. And that's why I think it's just universal.
I think so as well.
At the end of the day, a comedy wouldn't work if the fact that you didn't... If you can't relate to it, then the writer's done something wrong. If people aren't laughing to the bits they should be laughing at, then...
Well, let's break this down to the basics, okay? If the comedy is set in a working class background, in a working class environment, how does that change how funny it is compared to a middle class sitcom? In fact, what middle class sitcoms can you think of, actually, before we go there?
Well, they're talking about the fact that, because Miranda won a lot of awards recently.
I've not seen any of that.
So Miranda was one. Then you've got Outnumbered. I think it's more the BBC. It's the BBC sort of sitcoms I think they're poking at, is the fact that BBC are always that sort of middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, so that's what they're moaning about, really.
Yeah, but... Really?
But then another thing I was just thinking is that sometimes the fact that I don't think class, like... I've even heard my lecturers at uni talking about the fact that, like, In-Betweeners, if you look at that as a sitcom, although it's very working class, just general boys and lads, he's even said how he's great. His parents watch it and they laugh at it. So I think sometimes the comedy actually comes out of the fact that there's different classes, that you can laugh at them, or we can, like, you'll laugh at the royal family because they're so different, or...
Well, okay, let's look at, for example, my family.
Yeah.
That's... Middle class.
Yeah, I'd say just middle class, yeah.
Ignoring how it's developed over the years. First few series, funny or not?
Yeah, it's funny.
Very funny.
Yeah, definitely.
And what was it that made the comedy?
The characters, of course.
Yeah, and the family environment. Did it have anything to do with the fact that he was a dentist?
No.
Not at all. Did it have anything to do with the fact that she... toured museums? No. The comedy was there because of their relationships.
The family relationships, yeah.
Which everybody experiences. And there were so many things, like Ben Harper, the dad, reminds me so much of my dad when he's in a bad mood. And likewise with the mum, reminds me of my mum when she's in a bad mood. But I'm from a working class background.
So basically the debate's a load of bull.
It's a load of wank. Quite frankly, it's people trying to...
Just pick at the fact
pick,
that... Yeah,
again.
Nitpicking.
Oh.
So we don't agree with this story.
No, completely disagree. I think the comedy
funny,
that's coming out at the moment is brilliant stuff.
If something's funny, it's funny. Who cares what the class is? If it makes me laugh, I'm happy.
And if you don't like it, don't watch it.
Yeah, turn it off. You've got that bloody control for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. We've got what? 200 channels now,
exactly.
In pretty much every house. I'm sure you can find some comedy that suits your... Put Dave on! There was plenty of working class comedy on Dave. Plenty.
Exactly.
Goodness me.
Anyway, I guess that would wrap up that news story.
I think so.
So that actually leads us nicely into this week's little competition we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, talking about BBC sitcoms... BBC are actually looking for new sitcoms. Well, they're looking for sort of ideas, really. They've got, if you go on the Writers Room website, which is www.bbc.co.uk/writersroom, they've got a new opportunity on there called Laughing Stock, and basically they're looking for you to make a 15 to 30 minute script, and then you have to give a sort of an outline as well of how it may develop, and that's just open to anyone really who hasn't been commissioned on TV before. So that's a great opportunity to get your working class, your middle class,
or
your upper class.
Upper class, or first class, or high class, whatever you want to call it.
Or your snobby, whatever you want, sitcom out there. So if you're one of those people that are complaining at the fact there's not enough working class, maybe you should get off your arse and actually...
And write one.
Write one, if you're going to complain about it. But yeah, so I think that's a great opportunity. I think, I don't know, it is very, very, very hard to write comedy. And I think,
yeah,
but there's books out there. Watch loads of comedies, watch loads of sitcoms, and just, I think, give it a go. Why not? 15, between 15 and 30. So you, if you say a page a minute, that's 15 pages. So
is it limited to only people that have not had anything commissioned?
It's for people who haven't been commissioned for a TV program. So it's quite open.
Fantastic. So that's really good to start off then. Yeah, BBC as well.
That's what I mean. If you have a good idea, they like it. Because I think we've got like Channel 4 at the moment. I do think are pulling away on the comedy sort of department.
They're
so
leading it, aren't they?
I think BBC are sort of looking for a bit of new comedy. And comedy's coming up. As you said, comedy at the moment's been better than it's ever been. And that's why I think they're looking for it.
A lot of money's being pumped into it at the moment. I think it's because it goes back to the whole escapism story, because everybody's in the shit right now.
Everyone wants that light relief.
Yeah, and it's working. I giggle away all the time watching TV.
What sort of comedies have you been watching?
Well, I mean, we were watching, I mean, we haven't watched it for a while because it stopped, but Phone Shop.
Oh yeah.
Which some people,
which is a very new comedy as well, which was actually, that was part of Channel 4's competition looking for sitcom writers. Right.
And
so
some people think it's rubbish. I have heard many people comment on how rubbish it is.
I
can kind of understand why they might think that, but
I'd say,
made me laugh.
I'd say the storylines maybe be a bit off, but it's those characters. If you've got good characters, good actors playing those characters, you make a good sitcom. So if you feel funny if you feel funny, go to the doctors. But if you think you can be funny, I'd say go for this competition. And yeah, it's called Laughing Stock 2011. Just check it out under BBC Writers Room. The closing date. That's probably quite important. The closing date is the 21st of February. So you haven't actually got too long. We could have gave this earlier, which I've actually been working on my entry at the moment. Still need to get it going. I'm about 22 pages in. But yeah, just go for it. You've got 20, how many days probably got? Just about 25 days or so.
Yeah, just under a month.
But that's 15 pages. It's
about
worth a go.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. Awesome!
And what's the worst that can happen?
Exactly.
They might reject you. Who cares? You'll come back next year.
Exactly. Nothing to lose other than time. Right. So.
Oh, it's another episode over.
Yep. I don't know how long this one is. We've got a lot of editing to
I think this one's longer than before. I've got to say, if we cut out all your pauses, we might actually cut it down to about 10 minutes.
So we're going to do a bit more shameless plugging before we leave you.
Yeah.
I will start once again. You can follow me on Twitter at Wayne_Ingram, or you can look at my website, which is www.wayneingram.co.uk. That's Wayne. -ingram.co.uk
/
no, I'm joking. -. Wayne-ingram.co.uk. You can also email me for any feedback you want to give on the show, any comments you want to say. We'd love to read out some stuff that people have sent in or whatever.
Or any slagging off.
Any advice, any comments on anything we've discussed, blah, 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 blah. You can email me at wayne-ingram@wayne-ingram.co.uk. Do you want to give your email this time, Jem, or are you just going to play it safe?
No, I'm going to play it safe again, and you can add me on Twitter at @myscriptquotes. Just add me, and then maybe next week I'll give out my... If you come back next week, maybe I'll give out my email. But for now, send all your messages on to Wayne.
Okay, so I think that's another episode over. That's episode 2 done and dusted.
In the can.
Hopefully in a fortnight time we should have episode 3 coming your way.
Yep, so come back please, because we like that people like our voices and listen to us. I think.
Yes, please come back soon.
Farewell.
Ciao for now.